Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Are we entering an era of personalized, interactive, and shoppable television advertising? Learn if we are from TV Scientific Chief Executive Officer Jason Fairchild when he joins me next. Also ahead, a new venture uniting Comcast and Charter Spectrum, our classic trivia question, Disney Plus has a show to know, and 50 years of The Price is Right, and why we're still coming on down to see it on CBS. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker Internet Radio, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Verbal, Reason, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to all the good stuff whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 56 degrees at the top of the hour in a very cloudy New York City environment. And we welcome you on this Wednesday, the program all about TV's current and future. Special hour for you ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, interact with us with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. Our chat room, as always, is open for you to use. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, you can connect and be with others through Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, those people live with you. Jason Fairchild from TV Scientific will join us after these news notes. It's been a big day for disclosing new TV ventures. For starters, top cable operators Comcast and Charter or Charter Spectrum are partnering up 50-50 to launch a new mega content venture distributed to smart TV sets and gadgets. The unnamed project would involve Comcast Flex operating system and multi-channel bundle Xumo. Peacock will also be an attraction. Meanwhile, Cartoon Network will team up with Outlook Company, set up by former NFL player Trevor Price, to develop tunes created and drawn by multicultural talent. And finally, JoySauce Network, a new website with ambitions for smart TV adoption, premiered earlier today. The venture offers series and specials, both scripted and unscripted, involved or developed by Asian Americans. Now our quickies. TBS has dropped The Last OG, the popular Tracy Morgan sitcom that was produced here in New York after 4 seasons. Disney Plus's Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers movie is set to debut May 20th. The live-action animated feature stars John Mulaney, Andy Samberg, and Kiki Layne. Saturday Night Live cast member Pete Davidson graduates with his own scripted comedy series. Bupkis, with Davidson aboard as star, head writer, and executive producer, will appear on Peacock. Look for Harley Quinn character Kite Man to get an HBO Max tune of his own. The name? Noonan's. And multi-sport ESPN play-by-play caller Jason Benetti will be doing the honors for Peacock's Sunday leadoff baseball game. The first contest, as I believe Red Sox of Boston and the White Sox Chicago, will run on May 8th. And I believe it will be simulcast, the first game, by NBC. And that is news notes for today. And now joining me here in an internet rating exclusive is the co-founder and chief executive officer of TV Scientific, which recently received a $20 million investment, Jason Fairchild. Jason, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Where are you calling from today?
Calling from Los Angeles, California.
Great. I'm going to pop the question to you that we raised at the top of the program, which is this. Are we entering at last an era where advertising is personalized, interactive, and shoppable to viewers?
I think we're entering into a new era for sure, driven by massive sort of consumer shifting behaviors over towards consuming content via streaming services, like over 100 million households at this point, right around there. And I think half of that is ad-supported. So that lays the foundation for a few things. One is I think a new, entirely new class of advertisers can now advertise on CTV or on television in general, where in the past they have not been able to. So the entire TV industry historically has been concentrated around 500 or so national brands who want reach and frequency kind of awareness marketing. Now, because connected TVs are by definition connected to the internet, in many ways, digital marketing-like precision is now possible on CTV, and that will open up the doors to millions of advertisers that advertise on, say, search and social, Google and Facebook, to move over to connected TV. And many of those advertisers will be e-commerce oriented and may, for example, and we're seeing this in the early days, may, for example, leverage QR codes for direct response mechanisms to land on a product page, for example. And now we're also seeing some innovation around clickable sort of interactive e-commerce ads. Early days, but I believe that ad formats around shopping are one of the huge areas for innovation going forward. And it's now possible because CTVs are basically computers and are connected to the internet, so far more functional than a traditional linear TV.
And they also have artificial intelligence, voice, and possibly video services, which allow you, using a service like Siri or Alexa or Google Assistant, to actually use your voice or your voice remote to shop, order products, order services with the television set without having to do it through the smartphone or another second screen, as they like to say.
Exactly. Obviously, there's some consumer behavior and adoption that needs to happen, people getting used to talking at their TV, for example, but lots of promise in those areas for sure.
Mm-hmm. I was on the phone on a debrief with an executive from Accenture, which is coming out with a number of studies. I'll be doing a story on it for Media Village, the Media Leadership website, who suggested that the rise of what you can do with smart TV sets and devices, where we're seeing more and more programming services that are ad-supported, that are using these products as the distribution way to reach viewers, as well as the involvement of interactive advertising, the involvement of shoppable ads, and all sorts of other things, and interactivity as the beginning of a new era of innovation. And he thinks that you're going to see things like more of these ad-supported channels really triggering commerce, triggering all sorts of new revenue opportunities. What do you think about that?
Yeah, 100%. Innovation always is going to follow new categories. And CTV or streaming services is a new category. And as we mentioned, as we discussed, because these connected TVs are by definition connected to the internet, they're far more capable than ever before. I think, though, the biggest driver of money going into this area in the form of investment, which fuels innovation, is, first and foremost, everyone believes that advertising is going to be radically different. Because if you think about it, since the 1950s, TV advertising has been fairly one-dimensional, reach and frequency against target sort of approximate demos. And that has been the exclusive playground of the major brands only. But now, if you're if you sell razor blades on Facebook and you're very return on ad spend focused or return on investment and focused, now you can move over and do razor blade advertising and understand your CTV and understand how many website visitors went, how many purchases went as a result of consumers seeing that ad. And I think what we're going to see is just a huge sort of renaissance of period of new advertisers flocking to CTV, which will represent an influx of massive dollars into the category. And those dollars will fuel a few things. One, they'll fuel more and better content choices for consumers, but they'll also fuel different ad formats and different capabilities that are introduced at various points along the sort of industrial complex of advertising, including shoppable ads, including, as you mentioned, voice activated or voice ordering, and even visual ordering in some cases. So I think it's a brand new playing field, massive room for innovation, all fueled by $170 billion of performance-oriented, say, search and social marketing dollars, finally moving over to TV, which is just going to, I think in the very near future, it'll double the size of the TV advertising market, which is a big deal.
Yeah. Where are these advertisers going to come from on the national level? Are we talking about up-and-coming fast food chains and restaurants? Are we talking about more products that are sort of in the environment nature or the environmental arena, whether it's cleaning products, whether it is vitamins, whether it's health products, all sorts of things in that vein?
Yeah, if you look at digital advertising, say the top 20% of Google or Facebook advertisers, Obviously, they cut across a bunch of different categories. But, you know, the biggest categories, I would say, are D2C companies, direct-to-consumer companies. These are, you know, Dollar Shave Club. These are Smile Direct and literally 1,000 companies like them or thousands of companies like them that sell their products direct to consumers on a search or social ad. And now what we're going to see is them move over to connected TV because they can measure the impact of an ad to a website visit or an ad delivered to a sale and therefore do very precise return on ad spend calculations. So that's one category, direct to consumer. The other is, I think it's going to be app install marketing. To put it in perspective, so casual gaming, the games you play on your phone, that's a massive category. And gaming companies spend over $100 billion a year to acquire new customers for their casual games. So what we see in the early days now is the larger of those casual game companies spending a lot of money on connected TV to get people, A, to become aware of the casual game, and B, to download it and play it. So that's a massive category. And it's not just gaming. It's any app install marketing. It's just a huge category. I would say the third, and these are, I would say, early adopters. And the third category you actually touched on, which is going to be more local or regional. So auto dealers, might be higher education. It might be legal firms that want to advertise regionally, and they have a very clear metric around how to measure the return on ad spend ratio. So they'll, for example, a higher ed may market to a target geography or target demographic in an area through CTV, measure how many people went to the website specifically after seeing the ad, and then how many people filled out the form requesting more information, and ultimately how many people converted to a paying student. And I think that's a real life use case. And I think every company, whether it's a flower store, auto dealer, or higher education, can leverage TV in that way. And I'll just say this: these guys are all very familiar with digital marketing. And digital marketing, if you think about it, how big is a Facebook ad or how big is a search ad? We're talking an inch, couple inches big, and they're always surrounded by other content and advertising that's literally designed to distract a user. And if you compare that to a TV user experience, you know, it's often 50, 60, 70 inch screens with surround sound in the center of the living room where the audience, the viewer, is in a lean back modality, so not distracted. And often they'll have a phone within reach. 80% of the people that watch TV have a phone either in their hand or within 3 feet. So the idea that you can deliver an ad more effectively on a 70-inch screen and have someone respond to it, it seems like a no-brainer to me. And I think we'll look back and just laugh at the assumption that TV wasn't as powerful in terms of driving consumers to action as say, a one-inch, you know, Facebook ad that's sandwiched between meaningless, mindless content.
You're hearing Jason Fairchild. He is the co-founder and chief executive officer of TV Scientific, which is based in Los Angeles. That's where he's joining us live this half hour tomorrow. We'll talk about what TV Scientific is and how they want to play this game. We'll also get Jason's thoughts about Amazon, which has a very special event coming here to New York on Monday night at Lincoln Center. And we'll also talk about all those internet websites and services from Chewy to DoorDash to Grubhub to HelloFresh to Carvana. And when are they going to become interactive in terms of their advertising on TV? So we'll get to all that soon. And if you have a question or comment for Jason, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. We have an exciting show coming your way on Friday, a big two-hour extravaganza. Listen to who we have on. From the new Roku Channel series, Swimming with Sharks, the creator, writer, and showrunner, Hafing Robinson. One of the top actors of our time, Tom Skerritt. You know him from his roles in NASH, A River Runs Through It, and the TV series Picket Fences. Well, now he has starred his own television channel called Evergreen, EVRGRN, spotlighting talent and culture from his home base, the Pacific Northwest. He'll be with us live in an interrated exclusive in our second half hour. Starting our second hour, we'll have weekend talk show host Marcy Hopkins. She has a show called Wake Up with Marcy. It's here weekends on WLNY-TV here in New York, one of the two CBS-owned stations in the Big Apple, and now she's syndicating the show to other stations. as well as Hulu. She'll join us in our second hour, along with two of the key executive producers behind the new ABC true crime series, Who Do You Believe? It starts next week, Alex Newsome and Ben Crumpton. That's all coming up on a huge two-hour edition of Tomorrow We Televised to wrap up your April 2022. Join us from the start, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Jason, what is TV Scientific all about? Do it in layman's terms we all understand. And how does your company want to play this smart TV interactive advertising game, especially now that you have a few million dollars in more investment?
Yeah, so TV Scientific is the first performance-oriented platform for connected TV. So what does that mean? It means that it means that advertisers can buy TV and measure TV in the same way that they do Google or Facebook. So think of Google AdWords or Facebook Ad Console that allows for any marketer in 10 minutes to set up an ad, start running that ad, and then measure the outcomes in a very specific way. In digital, that usually means how much per website visitor, or how much did I pay for a sale of a product, or how much did I pay for a download activation of a product. Whatever that is for a marketer, they measure it in a very digital-first way. And that's very different than traditionally how TV measurement works. Now, through TV Scientific, a marketer could do exactly the same thing to reach 100 million-plus U.S. households that view ad-supported streaming services. So they can set up a TV campaign in minutes, do all the targeting, whether that's demographic or behavioral or regional or hyper-local, whatever the targeting, important part of the targeting is for them, they can do. And by the way, anything you can do on digital, you can do on TV from a targeting point of view. And then they set their budget and they push go. Within minutes, the TV ad is running in their target destinations. And more importantly, within minutes, they'll start to see the outcome reporting, meaning they'll be able to see how many people went to the website. After the ad was shown to a given household, how many people made a purchase or downloaded an app or did whatever is important to them. So really it's bringing, for the first time in the history of TV, it's bringing digital-like advertising capabilities to TV, which should unlock a much bigger growth opportunity than what's been available to TV advertising historically, which again is about a $70 billion market, where search and social is a $150 billion plus market. So it's a much bigger set of advertisers at 9 million that represent $150 billion in spend that we can pull over to TV. And I think that's a big deal. That's pretty revolutionary.
When will viewers start to see these ads that you're going to place?
They're seeing them today. So we've been live. We launched, basically about a year ago in sort of beta format with a few advertisers. Now we have many advertisers running all kinds of campaigns from hospitals to direct-to-consumer ads for teeth whitening, for example, to you name it. We're active in market today. And a consumer, generally speaking, won't know the difference between the ads that they've been seeing while watching a given show on NBCU, for example, and one of the ads that come from our platform. The magic is that it's a seamless experience from a consumer point of view, and from an advertiser point of view, it's very different because of all the measurability we just talked about.
Are you doing it in such a way that the viewer can choose the specific commercial they'd like to see? Hulu's been, for example, the last couple of years, experimenting with the idea of choose your own commercial, where the viewer gets, let's say, two or three commercials from the same advertiser, and they pick which one they'd like to see.
No, not yet. I think that's a little bit ahead of the market. And I think the idea has been tested of people interacting with their screen through their remote. And the truth is just nobody does it. So I think the next iteration is going to be QR codes, and we're seeing some promising data there. And you mentioned voice or visual built into the OEM or the actual TV. And that's still, some ways out. So the mechanism, the idea that a consumer will engage and choose an ad, I think it's way ahead of what consumers are ready to do today. Could be wrong, but that's my sense of it. I think the deciding factors over what ad is shown to a given household are going to be more around, you know, does that household engage with a certain type of advertising, more than others? It'll be personalized at a very household or even neighborhood level versus one-to-one personalization. Again, that's my sense of it. And it all comes down to how is the user going to engage with their TV to decide which ad to see? And do users really want to engage with their TV to see which ads they want to see? I don't think that's a immediate opportunity myself.
The name of the company is TV Scientific, and its co-founder and chief executive officer is Jason Fairchild. He's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, our special hour-long Wednesday edition of the Pro About TV's Current and Future. Simon, I'm with you live from New York, 56 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment on our remaining minutes with Jason, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next week, we'll be coming your way on Thursday and Friday. We will not be on Monday because yours truly is going to be going hopping and bopping all over New York City for the first day of the Digital Content New Fronts, which are going to be in person for the first time in 3 years. So that's why we won't be on Monday. We will be on Thursday at a special time, one half hour earlier than usual. So check it out, 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. That's 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. And we will be with you Friday at our normal time. And on Thursday, we will give you the latest news on what is happening at the Digital Content New Fronts. We're spending a lot of news Thursday morning. We'll bring it to you in our news notes section. And we have some other guests that we will be lining up as well. So next week, Thursday, Friday regular time, Thursday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. Jason, one of those Digital Content New Fronts events is going to be Amazon Monday night at Lincoln Center. And they have a lot of ways they can now play television. They've got the Amazon Prime. They've got IMDb TV, which now is becoming Freeview. That's their ad-supported service. There's also Food Network Kitchen, which is their interactive service with Warner Brothers Discovery. They've got Thursday Night Football, which will start this year. They've got Twitch, which right now is not on smart TV sets, but it very well could be. And, they, of course, have got Amazon Fire TV and the Amazon smart TV sets, where we understand if you want to order any Amazon product you want, you can do it through the television set or through the smart TV device. What's your sense about how Amazon wants to play television? And are you expecting any major news from Amazon Monday night?
Well, I mean, at the highest level, Amazon is interested, is interested in their marketplace business, either selling products themselves directly or facilitating the sale of products from their millions of merchants. So, and to the extent TV can be a marketing channel to drive consumer demand for products and services, which clearly it is, then it's logical to assume that they're going to move more aggressively in TV. And we've seen that. We know that their advertising business is exploding. In terms of what they're going to announce, you know, your guess is as good as mine. And I think, again, going back to the idea that this is a new frontier for innovation, I think we're going to see a lot of companies testing a lot of different things. And what you described as, you know, as the TV being sort of an e-commerce conduit or portal where someone can engage with the TV to buy a product that's content adjacent, I think that's an interesting area, but just because Amazon does it doesn't mean it's going to be a good idea. I think the marketplace will tell us what is going to work and what's not, and ultimately it all comes down to the consumer experience. So, again, in my mind, if the onus is on the consumer to do X, Y, or Z, then it's got to be a good experience. They got to want to do it. You can't just assume that because you put something in front of a consumer, they're going to want to engage with it. So there's a lot to be proven, not just for Amazon, but for anybody. And, it all centers on consumer experience.
Before you go, Jason, what kind of role do you see a number of groups play in this television environment? You have retailers like Walmart and Target and Costco and so forth that one would think would want to play big in this. You also have this variety of internet advertisers, websites I'm talking about, from Chewy to Carvana to Angie's List. Now, Angie, What role do you see them playing? And finally, we have all of these grocery and product delivery services, from DoorDash to Grubhub to HelloFresh. Where do they play in this growing interactive environment?
Yeah, so all of those companies that you just went through, all of them, without exception, they are all interested in one thing, driving consumer adoption or consumer sales or consumer acquisition. Use whatever marketing word you want. They want to reach consumers and have those consumers take an action, whether it's to download an app or buy a product, whatever. So you could see Walmart, for example, getting even bigger into TV, not from an awareness point of view like they do today and have done for decades, but from a pure direct response point of view, meaning if they market a given product or service with a discount or a discount code, map to a QR, and measure the efficacy of that, how many vacuum cleaners did they sell over a weekend after advertising on TV, be able to have confidence in the ad investment to the ad response or ad return on ad investment, then I think it'll be huge. All of this, again, comes down to the one simple question: does TV advertising work from a direct response point of view? In other words, again, lower funnel, whatever whiz bang term you want to use, but can you use television to get a consumer to take action, whatever that action is? And I think this is where we're all seeing a big aha moment in the data, which shows very clearly that TV advertising is actually more effective than digital advertising, not just in terms of driving awareness and reach, but also consumer action to go and make a purchase or sign up for a form or sign up for more information or whatever the action is, download an app. It's way more effective than search and social because it's so unique. It's the most important screen in our lives, if you think about it, certainly in our house. And it's very unique in terms of consumer modality and lack of clutter and distraction around it. That we've seen the data prove out over and over, drives consumers to actually take action to order pizza or download an app or purchase a product using a phone that they happen to have in their hand while they're watching TV. So I think all those companies are interested in that outcome, and what they're all going to learn through companies like TV Scientific is actually you can do it today. You can market to a consumer and measure your return on ad spend. In other words, did the consumer take specific action after seeing the TV ad in a measurable, data-driven way? And that's what our platform excels at. And the big here is that this has never really been known before, and now it's knowable, and we know it, and we can help marketers actually execute it to drive sales.
One more thing before we leave this segment. Keep in mind that several years ago, Walmart made a $250 million investment in Echo. It's an interactive roaming service that's available on smartphones and on tablets and computers. Samsung is also an investor. There's been talk over the years that Walmart with Samsung and the investors would turn Echo into an interactive roaming service of some sort. They haven't yet. Will they? We'll have to just keep on waiting and seeing. Again, the name of the company that Jason is involved with is TV Scientific. If you want more details about it, here's where you go online, www.tvscientific.com. That's www.tvscientific.com. Jason Fairchild, thank you again for joining us. All the best with your venture. We'd love to have you back anytime you like.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on.
It's a pleasure. Take care. Have a great rest of your week.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Jason Fairchild, joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow will be televised coming up. First, awards from our wonderful sponsor at Audible.com. Molly Shannon has been around the TV scene for a long time, from Saturday Night Live to made-for-TV movies to roles in television series and specials. Well, what's Molly Shannon's life been like? Well, you can find out now in the brand-new audiobook, Hello, Molly. And it's available to you with a trial run, a one-month run, in Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. All you have to do to get things going is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, that one-month trial, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, the aforementioned, and you also get health and wellness information while the supply lasts. Plus, if you're already an Amazon Prime customer, you get two audiobooks for your trial, one of them from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio series, specials, and podcasts, plus great one-woman and one-man shows, and the best of Broadway, off-Broadway regional theater, and so much more. So for all the details, all you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/televised and go from there. Remember, audible.com makes a great gift for you or someone you love. When we come back, classic trivia question of the week, our show to know provided today by Disney Plus, and would you believe it, 50 years of The Price is Right on CBS Daytime. How is it doing, and why is it gone a half century? We'll explain the commentary, all coming up after we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Tonight and every Wednesday night, it's Sisters United. It's great women's talk, music, personalities, and a whole lot more. Sisters United, check it out tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best VTR 24/7 for you at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for this Wednesday, the last one of April 2022. Sam Nabon with you live from New York. Very cloudy afternoon happening here in the Big Apple, 56 degrees at the top of the hour. And we have a few more things to do before we wrap up this hour. We're delighted to have you with us. And if you have a question or comment that you'd like to share, go for it. Just go to 646-652-2996 and let your phone call make the walking, or you should say let your phone and your fingers do the walking, as the old model used to say, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Time now for our classic trivia question of the week. We introduced the question on Monday, and we're going for our second weekly winner in a row. Our prize this week, the brand-new best-selling book, Binge Times. It's all about TV's current and future, written by two wonderful journalists who follow the scene regularly, Dawn Tomolewski and Dade Hayes, who were on our show a couple of weeks ago. And if your first direct answer, that's what you win. Here's the question. What was Robert Conrad's first TV series? You know, Robert Conrad, The Wild Wild West, and many other TV series over the course of a huge career in the tube. What was Robert Conrad's first television series? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you win the new best-selling book, Binge Times. Great book, too. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Look for it at Facebook under Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. We have now over 775 followers on Twitter and over 2.8 million followers or friends on Facebook. So join them if we don't get a winner by the end of today. Once again, it's Simon Applebaum on Facebook and at UBC Simon TWBT on Twitter. Remember, however you play, you got to win to be in, so go ahead and play today, and all the very best. We have a chance at the end of the show. We'll give you the question one more time, all right? All right. And now it's time for our regular feature, A Show to Know, where we highlight a program that is worth your while to catch, and you may not know about it because it's not well marketed, promoted, advertised, publicized, falls under the radar screen of critics and journalists. Today's Show to Know I'm going to introduce with an experience from way, way back when. When I was growing up as a child, late 1950s, early 1960s, one of the first shows I watched at that stage of my life was a Saturday morning or Sunday morning series on WNEW-TV here in New York, now WNYW Channel 5, called Learn to Draw. The host was a very simply dressed person named John Nagy, G-N-A-G-Y. And the whole idea was you had an opportunity in a half hour to learn to draw anything from a scene of nature to a self-portrait to simple devices or simple things like a house or a child. John Nagy was someone who came across as very bright, made things very simple, easy to follow, and had a good time drawing for you and you learning from it. I didn't know at the time, but back in the late 1940s, early 1950s, Nagy had his own show on national television called You Are an Artist. And that's where he developed his personality before the television camera. And by the way, when you watched Learn to Draw, you also had the opportunity to buy one of his easy-to-learn drawing kits, which was a book with sketches that helped you learn how to draw, draw quickly, and draw with a lot of fun. John Nagy was a wonderful influence on me growing up to be very creative, and it's amazing to believe that we haven't had a series like that in decades. Well, that drought ended earlier today when Disney Plus launched a series called Sketchbook. It's from Supper Club. It's the producers of the Netflix Emmy-nominated series Chef's Table. And it's a wonderful show where some of the great animators from Walt Disney Studios help you learn how to draw some of their best characters. I'm talking about Cusco from The Emperor's New Groove, Olaf from Frozen, Genie from Aladdin, Captain Hook from Peter Pan, Mirabelle from their just Oscar-winning movie Encanto, and young Simba from The Lion King. The show is very intimate. It not only shows you how these wonderful animators do their thing, and you can follow them along, but also gives you an inside look at what it takes to be an animator and the kind of lives these talented artists have led, especially when it comes to creating a single iconic character. Sketchbook is a marvelous series for any age. And it's great to see that somebody has taken the lead to bring the kind of interactive drawing experience that John Nagy pioneered with You Are an Artist on the national level and learn to draw on the local syndicated level to life again. And by the way, it's 6 episodes, and the artists are really, really special. And they are Gabby Capoli, Hyron Moon Lee, Eric Goldberg, Jin Kim, Samantha Vilfort, and Mark Henn. And again, Sketchbook is now running on Disney Plus, and of course, Disney Plus is available on smart TV sets and smart devices. If you want more details about the show and, of course, the service, you go to www.disneyplus.com. That's www.disneyplus.com. Now, if you have an idea for a show for us all to know, a show that you like and you feel doesn't deserve enough attention, well, let us know about it. And just like Sketchbook, we'll showcase it on this program. Plus, we'll give you the credit because you came up with the idea. And we have to hear from you to do it. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if we use the suggestion on the air, you get the credit. All righty? All righty. Remember, in order to win, like our classic trivia question, you got to play in. So give us your thoughts ASAP. You can also leave your thoughts on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBT Simon WBT, and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum. I do respond wherever you follow me. Or you contact me within 24 hours because, as we like to say around here, what you say matters, especially as this TV world just keeps getting bigger and bigger and more fascinating all the time. In a moment, a commentary about a half century of the longest-running game show in this medium's history, The Price is Right, on daytime CBS. But first, I want to remind you that we have a very big show coming your way on Friday. It's a big two-hour extravaganza to wrap up your April 2022, and we have a tremendous lineup of guests. In our first hour, from the new Roku Channel hit, Swimming with Sharks, based on the popular 1990s movie starring Kevin Spacey, we've got the creator, the showrunner, and the head writer, Kathleen Robertson. She's an actress. Maybe you saw her performance in the 1990s on Beverly Hills 90210. She was around for 3 seasons on that popular series on Fox. Well, now she is getting involved in TV behind the scenes. Swimming with Sharks is her first series. She's also working, by the way, on a Lifetime movie and possible series pilot with Christine Applegate. We'll talk about that as well. In our second half hour, one of the most popular celebrated actors around. You have enjoyed his performance for decades as a co-star in MASH, in Top Gun, A River Runs Through It, as well as a starring performance in the popular CBS series Picket Fences. His name, of course, Tom Skerritt. And a week and a half ago, he launched a new network called Evergreens, a channel available on smart TV bundles and smart TV sets and devices. It's all about showcasing artists and culture from the Pacific Northwest, his neck of the woods. In some cases, it's showcasing talent and culture from there. In some cases, talent from the Pacific Northwest doing everything from made-for-TV movies, series, pilot series, all sorts of great stuff. Tom Skerritt will join us in our first hour. It's going to be some conversation. And our second hour, you'll meet one of the top weekend talk show hosts. Her name is Marcy Hopkins, and her show, Wake Up with Marcy, which started here in New York on WLNY at the CBS-owned station known as Channel 10 or Channel 55, depending on where you are. She'll be with us. Her show is now being syndicated to other television stations, and it's also popping up on Hulu. And finally, ABC has a brand-new series bringing next Tuesday called Who Do You Believe? It's an unusual exercise in true crime television where you, the viewer, get a chance to hear two sides of a crime situation. Then you play Sherlock Holmes to find out who do you believe. We will have the two key executive producers of the show, Alison Eversoe and Ben Crumpton. That's a big two-hour extravaganza for you, and it all starts at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, 2 hours for you, right here live and exclusive on Tomorrow We Televise. And remember, next week, because of the digital content new fronts happening all over New York City, we will be with you on Thursday and Friday. No Monday show, Thursday and Friday. And remember, the Thursday show is at a special time, half hour earlier than normal, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. That's 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. And then regular time a week from Friday. Well, now a comment. You know, there have been a lot of anniversaries that have been celebrated in primetime television, in other aspects of television so far this year, and there's more to go. And one anniversary that's sort of lying low, if you will, that I think should really be celebrated is the fact that this September, CBS will mark a half century. Think about that, a half century of the longest-running game show in this medium's existence, The Price is Right. 50 years in one place, daytime television on CBS. It is truly one of the most amazing success stories in television history. And in some ways, we take it for granted that 11 a.m. Eastern Time and Pacific Time and elsewhere around the country in the morning, that at the top of that hour, you're invited to join the people at the Bob Barker Studios at CBS Television City in Hollywood, and come on down when Drew Carey and those models and George Gray, the announcer, invite to check out the latest episode of The Price is Right. It is an hour of television that continues to draw high viewership. In fact, in recent years, the viewership has been the highest it's been ever. On a given weekday, Monday through Friday, between 4 and 5 million people watch The Price is Right. Why has this show done so incredibly? And why is this run so remarkable? Before I answer those questions, I want to give you a little context here. First of all, you should know that The Price is Right, the initial iteration of it, was a black and white, later television program that ran both daytime and then primetime on NBC, then ABC, for 9 seasons, from the late 1950s to the mid-1960s. And 9 years of a daytime game show is pretty much the best you can do. At that time, before 1972, when The Price is Right started on CBS at 10:30 in the morning as a half-hour show, if you had a daytime game show that ran 6, 7, 8, 9 years or more, you were in rarefied ground with shows like The Price is Right, the initial version hosted by Bill Cullen, or Password, or You Don't Say, or Concentration, which ultimately set, at that time, a record as the longest-running daytime game show, 14 years on CBS. I mean, so 14 years on NBC. When The New Price is Right, as it was called, came on in September of 1972, hosted by Bob Barker, nobody knew if this revival of the original series was going to work. After all, it had a different format. In the beginning, the Price is Right's original run, it was all about four contestants, and they would spend the half hour bidding on unique merchandise, and the one who came closest each time to the actual retail price without going over it won that item. The big winner at the end of the night would go back tomorrow or the next week, it was a nighttime show, to face new challengers. In first iteration, in this iteration of The Price is Right, which was developed by Mark Goodson and original executive producer Frank Wayne, that whole idea was the beginning of the extravaganza, if you will. In this case, four contestants would be called on stage. They would do that bidding for that item. And then the fun really began when the winner, after winning the item, would be called up on stage to play a pricing game. Three pricing games per show. And the two top winners of the pricing games would then go on to play a showcase round to win a galaxy of prizes. That's how it started. And 50 years later, that's still the format. Four contestants at a time bid. When one person won, one would take the place for the next bid, the one bid as they now call it. And, of course, you would have pricing games, three per half hour. And then you add the showcase showdown, where those top three winners would play against each other, spin that wheel for the opportunity to get in the showcase at the end of the show, and those two winners, one from each half of the program, would then play for the showcase. And that's been the format. Why has this show had a brilliant run and gone way beyond the run of other daytime game shows? And do it despite the fact that it also was competing in the beginning with a syndicated nighttime version, a once-a-week, hosted by Dennis James for five seasons to syndication. Then another version, a five-day-a-week early evening run from Tom Kennedy. Another five-day-a-week early run in syndication with Bob Barker. And the new Price is Right that was done for half a season by Doug Davidson, former co-star of The Young and the Restless. Not to mention the occasional primetime special on CBS. And go when Bob Barker brought the reins of hosting the show after 35 years to Drew Carey, who has been the host ever since. Well, I've come up with a couple of thoughts. Thought number one, the show has become the town hall of America. Think of it. 11 a.m., what you can depend on when you watch CBS, your local CBS station, is people cheering, assembled to get that opportunity for their seconds of fame as a Price is Right contestant from all over the country. It is really an amazing sight. And while the last two seasons have been tough because of the pandemic, hopefully when year 51 starts September, that crowd will be back and they'll be booming like nobody's business. You have that town hall atmosphere, an atmosphere of fun, an atmosphere where anybody can be a winner at any time. The second reason is because of the flexibility and the fact that you have an entire galaxy of pricing games. You never know what pricing games will go on any episode. You don't. There's no set rotation. When we had Mike Richards, at that time the executive producer of both Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal on the program, one of my favorite guests, even with the craziness that he later had in the last year or so, he mentioned that one of the things that make the show tick is the unpredictability of the pricing games. There is no set rotation. So there's always an element of surprise every single episode. One episode, you can have Plinko. Next episode or next minute, you could have the card game. Another one, 10 seconds. You do know that there'll be at least one game per half hour going for that, a new car. And that's what made it so great. You were on the edge of your seat, like figuring out what games are going to be played. And there was always the opportunity to put on new games. And some of the new games in the Drew Carey run have been terrific, like Pay the Rent, where you could win $100,000. Or Rat Race. Or the game where you're in the seat that rotates from side to side, and you have to figure out the prices of things in a set, you know, like 60 seconds. The games have gotten better and better and better. They're a lot fun. They're a lot versatile. And in many cases, they're easy to play. That's another factor, the easy-to-playness of the games. And the excitement that you also have special weeks, like Big Money Week and Big Car Week. Weeks where there's the stakes are raised. I also think another thing that's happened is that as time has gone on, the prizes have, I think, become more not only accessible for people, but also more relatable to people. Remember when, for example, a regular item would be up for bids, would be a grandfather clock? Now, in the one bid area, it's a new Apple computer or it's iPhone service. Or free made for a year. The prizes have, in some ways, become the kind of prize you need to have, or you'd want to have. They're usable. They're consumer friendly, if you will. So that's another factor. And the final thing is, it's a fun hour to watch. Anybody of any age can watch it. And that's why, in recent years, you've seen some wonderful things, like the April Fool's show. Remember the episode where Models Rule, the models and the Price is Right took over the show and did a great job? Or the day that Bob Barker made an unexpected return and it became a love-in. And this, by the way, was an April Fool's episode that nobody outside the people doing it, planning that episode, knew about. There was no publicity in advance. No, CBS didn't put an ad on saying, you know, watch this April Fool's episode. It happened, and you saw when Bob Barker came out for the first time in years, the place went bonsai. It was a love-in like you would not believe, and it was very, very special. This is a joyful show. It's a joyful hour, and it's played that way. And it also can be very moving and inspiring, too. The annual efforts to have a episode with breast cancer survivors, the annual salutes to the military, kids playing with their parents on a week of episodes, teenagers playing, celebrities playing for charity or helping fellow contestants win money or make their way in games. Again, it's all part of the unpredictable nature of The Price is Right. There's a lot of people, I think, that should be thanked for The Price is Right lasting 50 years on CBS. Obviously, you start with Mark Goodson and Bill Todman. And you continue on with many of the executive producers, Roger Dobowitz, Frank Wayne, Bart Iskander, Mike Richards, and in the last 2 years, Evelyn Warfel, the first female main executive producer of the show. And, of course, Bob Barker, Andrew Carey, and the models, and the announcers, starting with the inevitable Johnny Olson and Rod Roddy and Rich Fields and in recent years, George Gray. And, of course, the viewers. You can't last a year or 2 years or more than or 10 years or, as they've done, 50 years without the viewers. And I think The Price is Right is one of those programs. Drew Carey was recently interviewed and said that he believes The Price is Right could last a whole century. Who's to argue? As long as people want to come on down, as long as there are pricing games to be played, as long as there's an audience for it, I think you can count on The Price is Right entertaining all of us, daytime and primetime, for a long, long time. Congratulations, CBS. Congratulations, Price is Right, and Fremantle, which now runs the show, for what you've accomplished so far, and a little advance for what you will accomplish in the years ahead. The Price is Right is on Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern and Pacific, in some states of the market on your local CBS station. For more details, CBS.com. You can also go to PriceIsRight.com to find out if there are ways that you can be involved in special contests for prizes at various points in the year. Once again, it's CBS.com or PriceIsRight.com for all details. Price is Right, CBS daytime, and sometimes primetime too. CBS, of course, runs it, again, on your local CBS station, 11 a.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Some stations play it earlier in the morning or later in the day, depending on where you are. Again, I want to thank Jason Fairchild from TV Scientific for being with us today. And once again, I hope you join us for a really amazing program to wrap up this month. Big two-hour show. Again, joining us will be, in order, Kathleen Robertson, the creator and showrunner of Swimming with Sharks on the Roku channel. Celebrated actor Tom Skerritt, the founder of the Evergreen channel. That's E-V-R-G-R-N. Wake Up with Marcy, host and executive producer Marcy Hopkins. And from the new ABC True Crime series premiering next week, Who Do You Believe? Executive producers Alex Nurso and Ben Crompton. That's all Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you came in late on today's episode and you want to catch up on this one or other episodes we've had in April and early this year, all you got to do anytime is go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. In fact, we've had more than 50 replays yesterday of our episode on Monday, which featured an exclusive interview with the writer of the HBO movie premiering tonight, directed by Barry Levinson, The Survivor. That's writer Justine Yule Gilmer. Thanks to all of you that tuned in live, and as I said, the more than 50 people who tuned in on replay yesterday. And if you can, share that show. It's getting great reviews. It's on 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO, and it will be seen also on HBO Max. So tune us in at blogtalkradio.com/televised. And you can also check out our replays anytime on podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, whether it's Amazon Music, Spotify, Verbal, Reason, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, and Amazon Music, which includes Vizio's smart TV sets. Always love hearing from you. What do you think about today's show? And what's your idea about interactive advertising, personalized ads, shoppable ads? Love to hear. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And remember, we always love hearing from you, and we do respond back within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Andy Toe is B-Charge General Manager, Jay Sonberg, Head of Content. Website services provided by On Podium, the Ernest New Podcast Uppost. For details, go to onpodium.com. Tara Fakis is our web coordinator. Tomorrow we televise brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audio book or two and much more, audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. We're back on Friday with our big two-hour end of April edition, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio speaker and TuneIn Radio and all of our podcast destinations. Remember, until then, make sure that whatever you do between now and then is safe and great. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, check the medical situation, and find out about all the medical treatments now available to you as an alternative. And then make a choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.